Happy New Year, Mike. We haven't recorded since 2021.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Hi, world. Happy New Year.
Hi, world.
Hi. Hello.
It's end of January, but this is our New Year's ep. Mike and I are workaholics. We have to make time for our podcast.
Yes.
it's challenging.
Been a crazy couple months, so it's been tough for us to schedule and find time. But here we are, and it's a new year, and it's hopefully a better year. And
I say we're in season three of the pandemic, 2021 and 2022. Time has passed and it's freaked me out.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, I'm frozen in 2020. Like how are we in year three?
Yeah. You know, and what, sorry, not to cut you off real quick, but I just had this thought, think about this. And this is something really depressing, but like, I just thought about this the other day. I was talking to a friend and I was like, wait a minute, this is interesting. I was 39 when the pandemic started in March of 2020. I'm going to be 42 this year in 2022. Think about that for depressing. No wonder time flies, right?
Oh, well, when you're a female that I don't even want, I can't even say, the pandemic started at me at 37.
Yeah.
And I just had my 39th birthday and I was like, fuck. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not ready.
Yeah.
This to be my last birthday in my 30s because I've been frozen in time,
right?
From home for 2.5 years. And just like, I think we thought 2020, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. Let's get to the vaccine. We'll get through it. And we're in year three of it. And there's a raging new variant. You and your wife, Lindsay, just recovered from COVID.
Yes.
And, we can say this real quick as a person who has two vaccines with the booster. What was that like for you?
Yeah. COVID? It was weird for sure. Definitely weird, but definitely I want to stress my point was that it's in 2 years, I've been four different ages in 2 years. So that's the weird part. And during this lull of this weird Twilight Zone 2 years that we've had, I've turned four. I was 39, 40, 41, and now 42 in 2 years. So I've just been having that epiphany of like, holy shit. Like, yeah, that's why. Of course, it feels like time is going by, especially during the Twilight Zone. It's like, I turned four different ages. Like, anyway, that's been on my mind a lot.
Everybody's freaking out about it because everybody feels like we've been robbed of 2 years of our lives.
Yeah.
Like we're just,
but
it's
yeah.
like,
but yeah, I, anyway, sorry.
It's very weird.
Yeah. I'm getting weird. But yeah, it's just weird. I just thought about that though. I was like, yeah, that's why we always feel like it's like, oh my God, time is flying. It's like, yeah, because two times a year, we're two different ages. I've had that epiphany the other day. I was like, yeah, that's fucking weird. I've never thought about it that way. Because when we associate a year, it's like, oh, in the year 2000, I was 20. Oh, yeah, but I was also 19 as well in the year 2000. So
yeah, no, that's deep thoughts.
It's weird anyway. But no, COVID, it was weird. It was definitely, we caught it. We were super safe. We always wore a mask, but we did slip up one time. We talked to this guy for a minute indoors without our masks on, and we know that's where we got it. We're just like, that had to be it, because 2 days later is when Lindsay started showing symptoms, and then I started showing symptoms the next day after that. She had a scratchy throat. I started having a headache that was unlike really any headache I'd had before. It was similar to the headache I felt, like a mild, dull headache when I first got the vaccine. It was that kind of similar headache feel. Like, but thanks to, I had my booster, had the two shots. I know for a fact that they were working, because I would feel what COVID could be like in me. I felt glimpses of it where I would get this like razor blade sort of scratchy burning feeling in the base of my throat, of the top of my lungs. And it would start to slowly amplify to a point where I was thinking, if this gets worse, this will be the worst thing I've ever experienced in my entire life, and will be bad. Like, will be
it's so scary.
Really bad. Yeah. And then literally within 5 minutes of feeling like that, I'd feel totally fine. So like, feel like $100.
The iceberg, but you were like, thank God I'm vaccinated because
yes.
I can manage
yes.
this.
Yes, numerous times. Like I would stay, I would be sitting there for a couple hours in meetings for work virtually, mm-hmm. and I would stand up and I would literally feel like a 95-year-old man that could barely wow. walk. And my the body aches, a full body aches from head to toe. I would literally feel like a truck hit me. And once again, in 10 minutes, I felt like I could run a marathon. I'd be like, I feel amazing right
wow.
now. Like what happened to those body aches I just felt, where I felt like I was slowly dying. I feel like amazing.
It came in like waves and spurts and like
in waves. Yep. It was always waves. Yep. And I know thanks to the vaccine, that was because my body knew how to fight this thing. Mm-hmm. But if my body didn't know how to fight this thing and I had pre-existing conditions or whatever, mm-hmm. it's no wonder to me that people are going to the hospital and being put on ventilators and dying yeah. from this, because it is not a fucking joke.
It's not
like, it is very real.
Cold. Yeah.
It's not a cold. I've had the flu before. This, I could tell based on what this could have become, mm-hmm. this is so much worse. It's so much worse than
yeah.
the flu. And yeah, my nose was like a waterfall. It would not stop running. Yeah. And definitely got a little bit of the cough and that would come and go and whatnot. But overall it was manageable. Because I know it was a big the reason for that, the proponent to that was the vaccine and the booster.
Well,
because I never lost my smell.
I was going to ask that. And do you ever lose your taste or smell?
No, didn't, not at all. And the biggest thing for me was the headache, which again, took a Tylenol and I was mm-hmm. fine with the headaches. And then the body aches again, that helped with Tylenol, but those would come and go. Again, I never really had nausea, never had, any major fatigue. It would just kind of come and go at times where I would just feel like, yeah, you know, I've half the day I've been busy and now I'm really tired. But that could have been just from lack of sleep the night before. I don't know if that was really COVID or not.
Combination of everything. Yeah. And just for history
yeah.
purposes, when we listen to this podcast in 5 years, this is when Omicron,
yeah.
that variant was raging. But we know every 2 weeks it's some sort of, at first it was Delta, the Delta variant. Now we're in Omicron season and it's the dead of winter
yeah.
right now in January. And the flu is, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you and Lindsay are okay. And, got through
Thanks,
it
yeah.
and it's rough. Every other person I know has COVID right now. Like it's just
yeah.
everybody.
It's
it. Yeah. Yep. And it's,
yeah.
it to self-isolate for a year. Okay. We were talked about that, but for 3 straight years of like, sometimes I'll sit there and think, remember 2019, remember when life was like normal, and like,
mm-hmm.
I'll even drive by my community theater, like Avon Players where I live. And I'm like, I want to go see a play, but maybe I shouldn't yet. And I'm like, I've been saying that for three
oh, yeah.
years, but
yeah.
creatively, let's talk about this before we talk about our next guest, Ryan Farley, who's your best bud. And
yeah, literally. Writer. Yeah. My brother. Yeah.
He's
my brother from another mother. Yeah.
And he calls you Mikey throughout the podcast we're about to listen to. And I got a kick out of that. That's how close they are.
He was the best man at my wedding and I've known him now almost 24 years, as I'll say, you'll hear me say that again,
mm-hmm.
but, we go way back. We've been through so much together and, I've watched him literally start at the bottom and work his way up to where he is now. He's a very, very successful writer and producer in the television business in Hollywood. And it's pretty cool, pretty awesome to be able to say that. And I am insanely proud of him and watched how far he's come and how hard he's fought to make it to where he
mm-hmm.
is. And he's just never given up. And the guys have just been beaten down so many times by the industry telling him no, 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 or you're never going to do this, or this is never going to work, or, this isn't a good script, or this isn't good enough. And he's just like, you know what? All right, well, screw you. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah,
relentless. Yeah. And I've always admired that about him. And so you'll hear that and hear him talk about that a lot in our interview coming up. So,
So creatively, Mike, what are you working on right now? What's happening?
Yeah. I've been trying to stay busy amidst the chaos and as we've talked about with creative endeavors, I've been working on some scripts and a script in particularly, that's been my main focus. And then also doing a play right now, a musical. It's a musical called Anything Goes. They're being very safe. We're following all the COVID protocols. Everybody has an N95 on. We keep our distance. It doesn't feel as lovely, you know, as it normally does in a show, but it's still awesome to be there.
It's still
worth
it, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes.
This whole experience of the pandemic, it's held me back so much. Like, I've even been afraid to even go into a theater and sit in a group of people close together in close quarters and in a close space. It's my favorite thing to do, but I'm like, how in the fuck, you know, like, it's just, it's frustrating. But good for you. That's exciting.
For sure. We got to keep doing what we love. And that's what we're going to talk about. That's definitely the theme of this episode is truly not doing it because of, oh, this is going to lead to this, or, oh, this is going to give me this reward. It's literally only saying, I am doing this
thing
because I love it, because it feeds my soul. And that's why I'm doing it. You're going to hear us talk about that a lot in this podcast, because our guest is my, like we said, my best friend. Mm-hmm. His name's Ryan Farley. He's been working in the business now for 17 years professionally, I want to say, since he first started, 17, 18 years. He worked on Cold Case, which you have all heard of. He did 3 episodes of that. He worked in the writer's room. He wrote an episode that actually was my first TV gig. He got me the audition for the first episode of television that I was ever on, which was episode called November 22nd. It was all about JFK's assassination, and I played a bartender. I had 3 lines, and I was very proud
of those
3 lines.
Was that Cold Case? Which?
Yes,
it was Cold Case. Yep. Okay, nice.
Yep. Yeah, that was my first big TV role, and I was very grateful for that. And actually, the episode was directed by Janos Swarczyk. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he was the director of Somewhere in Time, the movie with Christopher Reeve, which was always a movie that I liked. And now to have worked with him was a pretty cool experience.
Nice.
But Ryan also worked on a show called Chase, Justified. He did 13 episodes as a story editor, wrote an episode. Which, come on. I mean, that credit alone is incredible.
Yep.
He did a show called Red Widow. Then he also did another show called Low Winter Sun on AMC, which I was also on that, which I was very, proud of that. And I had a really incredible part on that show, that I got to work with Mark Strong, the actor, who was just one of my faves. And the guy was just a freaking genius, of an actor and incredible man. But Ryan worked on that show, got me that audition. So I just had to bring that up because I'm internally grateful for that. But then he did a show called Kingdom with Nick Jonas. He was a producer writer on that. He worked on 13 episodes as a supervising producer on the show Outsiders. He wrote 3 episodes of that. And then the biggest one to date for sure is Ozark. He was a co-executive producer on the Netflix hit series Ozark, 9 episodes. Wrote 3 episodes, wrote an episode in season 2 as well of that show. His list just goes on and on and on. He's got a lot of stuff in the works, some really exciting stuff that we can't talk about, unfortunately, in the works, but I'm just so excited to see where that stuff goes. He's working on one project with a huge movie star that's coming up.
Nice.
That's so cool. This interview is all about the business and his experiences in the business, what got him started, where he's at now, what keeps him motivated, his influences, how he, his writing process, and all of that. So hopefully our listeners will find some, learn something from it and enjoy hearing about a professional writer's experience in the television industry.
Yeah. And
film industry as well.
He hails from Warren, Michigan, where you guys met there. You guys talk about that throughout the interview. He's wearing his Detroit Tigers hoodie, and his dog is hanging out with him too throughout the interview. You'll hear that. So it's nice.
And his dog's name's Bandit Punchy. He's the cutest dog. He's the cutest dog ever.
He is very cute. A black and white pup. Year and a half old.
Your dog is up there too.
My dog's really cute. You guys both get that.
Yeah. Wolf is adorable.
That's with my dog. But this is a fun episode for so many reasons. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Ryan Farley, hello. When I met you, the day one when we met, not only was it though, I should preface that we met at the auditions for The Foreigner.
Yeah, that's where we met.
In a play we did in 1998. And I'll never forget the, so it wasn't the first time I met you. It was the first time I saw you was when you were auditioning in The Foreigner. And we talked about this where Ryan had Shayna. It was my favorite story ever. And I instantly knew I loved him because he had his back to the director. it was auditioning with his back to, and I'm like, who is this guy? Like, he's turn around, man. Like, why don't
he was
you
back? Turn? He was back.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was that committed. He was that into the scene and was giving it everything. And I remember being like, this guy is like, he's into this. Like, he's feeling it. Like, and we were kids. I mean, we were young.
I didn't get the part.
No. But
to be clear to our listeners, Ryan, you're from Michigan like us, right?
Yeah, I grew,
yes.
I grew
assuming up in, this happened. In, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Warren. So this okay. was this was at Macomb Community College Center Campus on Hall Road.
Okay.
I don't even think they have a theater department anymore, which they is don't. Really sad. Sad.
I know, that sucks. That really sad. Yeah. But the first time I actually met you, the second I met you, I'll never forget it. You were writing. You were literally sitting there working on what would become your first feature, which is the feature we'll talk about. We worked on together called After April. But you, that's when I have a vivid memory of meeting you working on a script. Yeah. So you've always been writing from the day I met you. And as I've told Shayna many times, you know, I've always admired that about you, that you have a drive, a dedication to writing, unlike anyone I've ever met in my life. And so let's talk about that. Let's dive in. Like, what is it that made you say, I want to be a writer?
Well, it's, as far as a career, I just really enjoy doing it. But even before I knew I enjoyed doing it, my older brother, Sean, who you also know, obviously, he's always, you know, done it his entire, you know, since he was a little kid, he's always been into that world. And so I knew in some weird way that that was like something you could do as a career, which a lot of people I talk to, they tell me, well, I didn't even realize I could do this as a career until, you know, I was so much older. But I knew pretty young that I could, but I always enjoyed writing, but I never really thought that I could do it as a career. I knew it was a career, but I didn't know I could do it as a career. And I wanted to be a firefighter. My dad was a firefighter. He's fire marshal. When I was growing up, born, and I wanted to do that. And I went through Fire Academy, and it was amazing. Just running into burn towers is really cool. And it was a lot of fun. But then I was going through EMT school, and I hated it. Mm-hmm. And so for like my whole childhood, I was going to like follow in my dad's footsteps and be a firefighter. And then I was 19 at the time. And there was just like this pivotal moment where I'm just like, I don't think I'm going to do this for my career. And I just like, from the time I was probably like 9 or 10, that's what I was going to do. And so when I made that decision, I was kind of like, well, fuck, like, I don't know what else to do, you know? And I kind of just started driving around the country. Like, I drove to like LA with my buddy for a little bit. I drove to like New York, to Florida. And then I started working all these like odd jobs, like every odd job you could imagine I worked. And then I saw, I mean, it's so crazy how it kind of worked out like this. I saw this thing that my brother got in the mail for like one of those screenplay competitions. Mm. And I mean, those, now I know that, you know, those are shit, right? Like,
that's like a whole other discussion.
Yeah,
that's a whole other discussion. And right. I mean, I don't want to say they all are, but you know, a lot of them are, you know, whatever. Anywho, but
yeah,
I was like,
choose, yeah.
I was like, I mean, why not? Why not enter this thing? Like, not really, you know. And I started working on this feature, I mean, it was just bad. Like this feature script I wrote, it was just like awful, right?
What was the feature? Was this
the very first thing I wrote was like the derivative of Goodfellas. It was like a song like that. It's just like,
what was that called again? I'm forgetting the name already. Yeah, holy shit.
But it was,
I remember reading it.
Yeah, and like it was just derivative of everything you've seen on TV.
Everything you admired, you put it into
your... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of what a lot of people are just trying to figure it out, you know, they do. And like it was garbage, but I loved doing it. Like I just loved the process of doing it and like creating a story and, you know, actually do. So I was like, just so like, I felt a rush from it. And I just, you know, loved that experience that I was like, I want to keep doing this. So then, you know, I really fast, I kept just churning out like crap scripts. But around that time, I started taking an acting class at Macomb Community College. And that's when I met Mikey.
Mikey.
and I was, Mikey's an amazing actor. So he actually got cast in the play that I had my back to the director on.
Oh, thanks,
but man. I was like a stagehand backstage, and I, you know, was working on a script, a feature that, you know, again, not great. You know, but
well, I'm going to cut you off really quick. That Ryan is very hard on himself, and I will always say I've never read, and I'm not just saying that because he's my best bud, but you're not. I've never read anything that you've written that has been bad, and like you've always had an inherent, like innate understanding of like art, character development, of story structure, beats, like tone, dialogue. Like it's always been in you because Ryan studied movies and TV is like his whole life, so it's always been there. So I had to butt in because you'll hear Ryan say a lot that script sucked, but he's never been bad. Definitely have grown in so many ways that like blow me away, and with everything you write. But anyway, I just had to say that because I love you.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, what I really enjoyed when I was taking these acting classes is that's when I kind of started playwriting and dabbling in that. And I actually found at least at that time that I really enjoyed that more because that was a great canvas to work on character development and dialogue and things of that nature, because especially in, you know, black box theater, all you have is characters and dialogue. That's all you get. You don't get the advantage of anything else. And, you know, people walk out if it's not good. So I kept taking acting classes at this community college for like 3.5 years. I was like a second semester freshman and I was like 23.
I was there like 7 years, I think.
Yeah, we just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And so, but there was a professor there that I was pretty close to. I'm probably closer to now than back then. But she was very influential in the sense that she was really good at, you know, promoting her students to, you know, strive for more, you know, do more. And she kind of came to me one time and she was like, why the fuck are you still here? You know, she didn't say those words exactly, but she was kind of like, get out. And so she actually helped me research a bunch of colleges. And I ended up getting into Emerson in Boston for playwriting and theater studies. And then I did a double major in theater education and history as well. And so I did that. I was a 23-year-old freshman. I was like older than all the seniors, but I was so invested in my education and so invested in just doing what I did, getting better, that it was like, I was just like voracious in my reading and my study habits. And I just had a different drive, I think, even when I went to Boston, because I felt like, I just felt like, I don't know if I was because I felt behind or if I felt like I had something to prove. I'm not sure exactly what, but I just had this drive to learn as much as I could and, you know, as fast as I could. And so I, you know, I was there 3.5 years, kept focusing on the playwriting, but it was in that time when these great shows like The Sopranos and 6 Feet Under and Deadwood and TV was becoming a new thing. You know, the hour long format on cable was, it was bending what you could do on television. And I got into those shows, and Rescue Me is another one. And I got into those shows and it was like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do like higher brow 1 hour drama, not even higher brow, just I was better storytelling. And it was the closest thing between theater and film were these high level shows. So I wanted to focus on that. And so I was 26 and I didn't know anyone in the business. I didn't know anybody. Didn't know one person in Hollywood or New York or anybody in the business that could help me. So I was like, well, what are you going to do? I'm not just going to just taper the time. I mean, I know that I needed something to sort of, kind of get me in there a little bit. So I chose the grad school route. So I applied to a bunch of schools for in their film programs for screenwriting, and got into USC's film school. And so that's what brought me to LA. And that was 2005.
Yeah.
And brought me to LA. And it was a 2-year program, their writing program. And at that time at USC, they didn't have like a TV track. It was like you could take TV, you could take classes for writing television, but they didn't have just a pure TV track. And now they do. And more kids are in that now. More of the students are in that now because it's just taken over. But at the time they didn't. And I went there and said, I want to do television. And so I was actually one of the, rare students who is like, no, I want my focus to be television. I just want to do 1 hour drama. That's what I want to do. This is blowing up. It's just, there's going to be more opportunities. And so I focused on that. I, really made my focus on that. And I was fortunate enough to have a professor at USC named Jeff Melvoin, who became like a sort of mentor type figure. And he was a professor of mine. He was doing a, he was kind of a visiting professor that semester. And we really got along and he liked my work and passed it on to a friend of his who was going to be running the show Cold Case on CBS. And so she read this pilot I wrote and gave it to her partner, someone who was co-running the show with her, and they brought me in for an interview off that for a staff writing job. And I didn't get that staff writing job, but they brought me in as a researcher on the show and like kind of researcher slash writer's assistant. I would, kind of figure out whatever the writing staff needed and things like that. And then there was an opening for a freelance episode, and I pitched my bosses this idea for a freelance episode, and they said, yeah, let's do that. So that's how I got my first episode. And then I wrote that was produced. And then from there I was brought onto the staff full time. And then from then I've been that kind of what sprungboarded me, and I've been fortunate enough to work since then.
So amazing, man. Yeah, it was an incredible journey to watch you go through everything too. I mean, you mentioned like going to Emerson, and I remember driving out to see you when you were there. And,
you came and saw a play I wrote.
Yeah, for sure. It was awesome. Yeah. And then even the one when we saw that you got produced, the shows you wrote, the one acts at the barn,
that's right, that was cool too.
That was awesome. But
that was fun.
But I've always that's what I've always admired about you. And that's something, Shane, I've told you about many times about Ryan, is that there is that drive in you. You've always had that drive, that nonstop, like you said, unsure of where it really came from in a sense. Like you mentioned, where you're trying to prove yourself, or you're trying to, you know, just you get it all out. You know what I mean? I think it was just a passion in you. It's just all, that's what I always saw.
Yeah. It's definitely a passion.
100%. Yeah. And you were always writing something, like always. I mean, how many scripts would you say you've written? I mean, plays, teleplays, screenplays combined. 100, I would, at least like 100 something, I would say.
Yeah, easily. I don't even know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I don't even know. I know that I'm working on, I think, my 17th teleplay that will get produced. I think I've had like 15 or 16 produced.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and you know, but I mean, out of all the stuff that's been produced, still most of it hasn't, right?
Yeah,
it's just like in a drawer, sits there, you know. And I do everything before I type it up. I do it all in notebooks, and I do it longhand. So I've just got like these stacks of notebooks from stuff.
Like Eminem does in his shoe boxes with the yellow hats. You know he does
that?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
You actually just write it down like that.
Yeah, I write everything longhand at first. Except like outlines and stuff. I'll type those out and stuff. But when I'm going to the actual script, and dialogue, and scene construction, I do everything in a notebook first. Because then by the time I get on final draft, it's already a second draft when it gets on there, and I'm still revising. So by the time anyone even sees it, it's already at like a third draft. You know, it's already like been corrected and recorrected, because I correct it in the notebook when I'm writing, and then I correct it from that to that, then I go through that again. So you catch a lot. At least I've caught all, you catch a lot where you're like, it's not working.
Yeah.
For me, when I do it like that.
Forces you to really like step back and see like what's on paper, as opposed to, is that on screen? It's a little easier to like blow through it. You mean?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not totally sure. I think maybe I just don't like looking at like that white screen. You know, it's like there's something, I don't know if it's like
the tactile. Red squiggle every time you misspell something. It's like so mechanical. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if it's like, and I think, you know, I think there's science behind, you know, putting the pen to paper and moving
there
it.
There is.
You know,
true.
Actually spark something in your brain, you know? And
yeah,
I can find myself kind of sometimes going a lot faster when I'm just writing it down. You know, because then you get in a flow, and then you can go back and cross it off, and it's easier. And you
that's
know,
cool, man.
Sass squiggles everywhere. Yeah,
and that's always been a part of your process in a way. I remember you sitting there, like watching a show like Rescue Me, and literally with a notepad, like taking notes, like while you were watching.
Yeah. I had a class one time at SC where we had to break down a bunch of existing shows. And so I had to go like beat, but it's super helpful because you see how many beats are, you know, and every show is different. So every show's structure a little different, but you see what you like and how they do it, at least as far as how they structure their storytelling. You know, I've been very fortunate that I was coming up at a time when those shows were kind of just kind of blowing up.
Well, Ryan, I want to say something. I want to like interject. I know you're humble and you're saying you're fortunate, but here's what I think is really interesting, because I'm just meeting you for the first time. You went to Emerson knowing exactly what you wanted, and you had that laser focus, I want to write for episodic television. And like you said, when it started to blow up, because I remember when I first moved in 04, I was told on the plane by random people, you have to pick TV or film. You can't do both. It's one or the other. And TV, I remember that shift when I was like, wait a minute. All of a sudden, TV is getting really fucking good. What's happening? When The Sopranos rolled out and when Sex and the City rolled out and all these HBO episodic series that had that cinematic quality, it was like, okay, TV is next level writing now. So you had that insight or intuition before that started to happen, and you found that niche for yourself and plugged yourself into it. And it was like, you didn't have this scattered focus about what you wanted to do.
No.
It's like you went into your schools. Like maybe that was this blessing that you waited to go when you were 23 and you weren't 18 out there just like floundering. Like so many people do that before they, but you figured out what you wanted. And it was really effective, and it's carved out a really nice career for you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, if I would have tried to split it, or if I was like, I might not, you know, be where I'm at. Because one of the things, you know, I mentioned to the professor that you know, was really good to me and, you know, introduced me to my first boss. I got into his class because another professor wasn't going to let me write something I wanted to write. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I know I want to do it. And she was like, no, we only do this in this class. And I'm like, well, fuck that, because I'm paying a lot of money to go here.
Yeah.
And I'm getting out of this class. And I did. And I got, and then so I switched into this class. And I may not be working today had I not done that. So there's definitely a couple key moments. Mm-hmm. You know, where you just kind of say, no, this is kind of what I want to do, and these are the steps I'm going to take, and it ended up paying off. And that's also part of youth, right? Like, I don't know if I'd do that at 43.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, if I walked into a class and the teacher's like, we're going to write specs of Muppet Babies episodes, I'd probably be like, okay, Muppet Babies, like, let's do this. Like, I just, there was just such a, you know, I don't know if that's age or I don't know if that's just because I've been in it. I don't know, but it's just, I had a thing of like, now this is what I want to do. And I think these are the things I need to do to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was, Michael, you probably did similar things. You're fantasizing about what college you're going to end up at, where you're going to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When you're in high school, I remember I went to the local Barnes & Noble in Rochester Hills, and I got one of those huge books out that were like the best colleges in the country. And I flipped through it. I was doing all this research. And I remember my fantasy was to go to school in Boston. I don't know why. I always wanted to go there, never went there. And I remember reading about Emerson and thinking, that sounds like a great school. It sounds like it's very hard to get into, but I'm impressed that you actually went there to that school. I just wanted to say that because it brought me back to the 90s before you actually like, we just use Google. It was like, what it is. I ended up going to LA, but I was like, Boston seemed like it's the most diverse college town in the nation and all that. Yeah.
And that's what's so crazy about that is like, you know, these people come into your life who make such a, like, that's where Nancy came in. I never heard of Emerson until this professor that Mikey and I had helped me research schools and was like, I think you might like this one. And I happened to get into it, you know, but I really didn't know much about it other than they had a program for what I was interested in. And, you know, I mean, it was such an interesting experience, you know, because being 23, you know, Emerson is a private, very liberal arts college with they probably have more students now, but I think it was like 3,000 students, you know, so it's not big. And it's very idealistic. And I mean that in the sense that like, well, I guess what I mean, it's young, Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of 23-year-old freshmen at Emerson College. And so being someone who came from the Detroit area and, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't, you know, we weren't poor growing up by any stretch, but we also weren't wealthy either. You know, it was very blue collar. You know, my dad was a firefighter. Mm-hmm. You know, and then he got really sick and that changed a lot of stuff for us growing up. So I couldn't pay, like, I was all on student loans, you know, like I didn't have, you know, I was like the kid who was there who was all on student loans and like didn't know how I was going to pay it when I graduated and just like got these student loans to go there. Had like coast,
you know, coast for SC, was it student loans at SC too? I looked at the school, yeah. I was like, can't afford yeah. it. Going to Cal yeah. State Northridge, forget, I didn't yes. even apply.
student loans for everything. I think when I graduated from SC, it was like $220,000.
Yeah, that's was the, right.
Was the debt.
It's crazy.
And I was like, well, I'm either going to be homeless or I'm going to have a career and, you know, let's risk it, you know, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I did have, you know, my stepdad, who was a good guy, you know, he co-signed. So he sort of took that risk with me. Mm-hmm. He didn't ever have to pay any of that. But the bottom line is we didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, Emerson, a lot of kids there do. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely, idealism there that I think I felt, and this was probably me just projecting, you know, but like, I didn't totally fit in socially there. I did liberally. I mean, I'm liberal as well, but that's why one of the reasons I wanted to go there, but I felt it was probably part age. It was probably part, you know, where you came from, other things, but just, and that was a benefit as well, because I actually ended up getting closer to my professors a lot and I'm, you know, still friends with some of them. And so it just was so clear that the drive was just academic, you know, and it wasn't because my parents were like, you're 18, pick a school to go to. And
yeah.
I feel that happens with a lot of kids, and it's kind of not fair to, it's kind of not fair to say to a kid, like, pick a school, I'm paying for it. Don't blow my money.
Yeah.
Well, it's an 18-year-old kid. They're going to blow your money.
Yeah.
You know? They're going to do dumb shit.
Yeah. 100%.
So, you know, I'm glad I didn't have those pressures and I was able to go when I wanted to go, because then I knew why I was there and was able to kind of focus on that stuff. But that was a good, it was a good academic experience. Boston is brutal, man. Just the winters there are just,
oh yeah.
And that's coming from Michigan.
Worse than Michigan? It was like 6 degrees 2 days ago.
No, but they're about to get hit. Them in New York are about to get hit with like 12, 14 inches of snow tonight.
Their snow is next level. I forget that. Yeah.
And it also just goes into like May. It's just like their winter's like it lasts forever. But then when I came out here on the West Coast, I'm like, I can never do that again. I can never live, you know.
And Mike and I went to LA for a long time, both moved back to Michigan.
Yeah. Freezing my ass off.
What is wrong with you? I actually like the winter. I'm crazy. Like, I like some snow. I like the seasons.
I like it if I'm like visiting and am leaving
for a few days. Yeah. Sometimes all of a sudden LA kind of freaked me out. I was like, what month is it? Do I have to be in a good mood today? I'm not in a mood, you know. I don't want to be in a good mood. I don't want to go to the beach. I just want to sit inside and whatever. What were you going to say, Mike?
No, how long have you been out there now, Ryan? What, like 12 years, 13 years now? Oh, no, longer than
It'll be 17.
Fuck, because I'm thinking, time is just completely lost all meaning to me.
Because of the pandemic.
Yeah, just in general, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's right, no, because I was there 10, and then we moved out there the exact same time. Ryan and I lived together in Hollywood when we first moved out there. and right next to Paramount.
That was not a good area.
No, it it was not. It's right on, it's actually, I think I mentioned this in another episode, but we lived, I don't know if you knew this, right? I just told you about this, but we were right across the street from where Desilu Productions was. Like, their office was right across the street from our apartment, like right there, which is so cool. It was just a total shit area.
It's just, I mean, Hollywood in general, right? Yeah. It's really, it's just sad. It's a lot of drugs, a lot of, you know, like a lot of big cities, but
it's gotten way worse too than when we lived when we were there. It's really bad now.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about I think you touched upon something too, Shayna, that I wanted to mention, and that's something, Ryan, that's very important, and we talk about it a lot on this podcast, is like staying not just motivated, but having that focus of like deciding what is it that I want to be in the industry. Because sometimes it's easy to say, I want to act, I want to write, I want to produce, I want to direct, I want to do it all. But you're one of the few people that I know, Ryan, were able to kind of say, because you're a great actor too, and we've worked together in a lot of plays. Yeah. He shrugs. but you are. And
I'm not professional level. I can act in college a little bit.
We did some fun shows together. We were in The Outsiders together, where Ryan was Derry and I was Pony Boy. and he was the Paper Chase where that was
fun.
That was a good show. Yeah, we did good. And Ryan played Professor Kingsfield, and
I did,
and shaved his head and bit his head.
I basically just watched all of John Houseman's scenes and just mimicked them. That was my acting ability.
Yeah,
I basically like find the person who did it great and just do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he did a lot of that, but even then, as much as you wanted to act, you were able to say like, writing is going to be my focus though. That's my, that is my number one thing. And I'm going to dedicate myself to being a writer. And I think that is the goal, the testament as in the business, to pick one thing that you want to be your thing. Ultimately, like number one, you can do the other things.
I never ever said, and this might have been one of the first times ever, I've never ever said I'm a writer. And it's funny, and I don't know if it was like superstitious, I didn't want to jinx myself, but I've just never described myself as that. People are like, what do you do? I'm like, I write for television.
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
I like to write, or you know, I'm writing this. Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things where, I mean, now, yes, professionally, that's what I do for a living. But, you know, there was many, many years when I wasn't doing it for a living. You know, I was just doing it. And I feel like it's one of those things that, I mean, I don't know how this will sound, but I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like anybody can just pick up a pen and be like, I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or anyone can go get a headshot and say, I'm an actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to ask about your playwriting. How many plays have you written?
I think full length, just a few. I think I've probably written more like one acts and shorter plays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for my dog.
He's rambunctious.
You've got a Detroit shirt on. You represent today. Right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Detroit hoodie, Detroit Tigers.
He's always representing.
I am. Unfortunately, it's usually the Lions.
Yeah.
That's a whole
No one's screamed at a TV more in their life than Ryan Farley when the Lions play.
Yeah, but I've sort of given that up.
Yeah, that's good.
There's just no point.
Good for your blood pressure, yeah.
Yeah, but I probably wrote more, you know, one X and, you know, kind of shorter stage plays. And I haven't written one in a while, because since I've been working in television, I've just kind of been focusing on that.
What I would ask is, what, I mean, I love one acts. One acts are awesome.
and short material. So what was your favorite play that you wrote? What was it about?
My favorite play that I wrote. Well, there were two I liked, I think. I wrote one about a professor on his first day of class who sort of had a breakdown in the class while actually you find out it's before the class began, but had a breakdown in class. And then I wrote this other one that was very kind of out there, a little esoteric, that was about these two missiles. Mm-hmm. Like, and they were two different types of missiles that were the commander who would fire these missiles off. It was very esoteric, but is who would fire these missiles off had lost his mind in battle. Mm-hmm. And was just like running around, like screaming at people. And these two missiles were waiting to be fired. And they were just like having a conversation about what to do about their commander who had gone crazy and what they're going to do now that he's not there anymore.
That one was the one they did at the barn that we just were talking about. Both of them were.
Done, yeah. At the barn.
Very
the
like
barn, kind of, the barn theater in Michigan is that
no.
It was just a theater in Massachusetts, actually.
That's right. Oh. Yeah, that's right. But
wait,
yeah,
can we back up and go back to the professor who has a meltdown before class or in class?
Yeah.
What was wrong? Why did he have a meltdown?
I mean, ultimately, I think it came down to just his own self-loathing and self-doubt. That if he could do the job, but it's really just like a long monologue, you know. It's a one man piece, and he starts lecturing, and then his lecture devolves as he's being challenged by his students about what he's speaking of. And it just devolves from there and devolves further and further until he just like leaves the class.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm fascinated by this. This is interesting. I am. Yeah. I'm genuinely like, whoa, sounds like a good, and you produced that. This got put up.
That one was actually produced twice. That was produced at Emerson one time, among some student shows, that someone else directed. I didn't produce that, and then it was directed outside at that barn theater in Massachusetts. Hi, Bandit.
Well, let's go ahead. Oh, there he is. Oh, look at that face. Hi, buddy.
Pup, my 13-year-old little dog Frankie's laying down here next to me.
Oh, you want peanut butter? No. Okay,
but let's talk about that, Ryan, because like what you, a lot of your writing is you definitely have like you a wide range of stuff that you've written, but there's always a Ryan Farley voice to and I've always said that with your writing, like it's very distinctly you because I know you, but when I read it, I'm like, yep, Ryan wrote this, is Ryan, you know.
Yeah, so a lot, and other people have told me similar stuff, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's huge. It's awesome. I mean, but I already know the answer to this, but who were your influences or inspirations as a writer? Like when you were getting started up and through to where you're at now, like who's inspired you? Who have you pulled, you know, from?
Oh, and it's so evolved too, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. since from where it started, but the one mainstay, the one mainstay has always been Eugene O'Neill.
Yeah.
And he's my all time favorite author, playwright, you know, writer, however you want to. And his work just, you know, encapsulates so much stuff and just heartbreaking. Just so heartbreaking. Hey, Bandit, come get peanut butter.
So funny.
No, totally. And there's a distinct, O'Neill quality for sure that in your writing. And there's even some Mammoth there at times. And
I was
going
to say, the professor reminded me of, immediately, I thought, Mammoth. Because there's a Mammoth play that involves a professor and a student, and I'm blanking on what it's called. But sorry to interrupt you, Mike. I'm just agreeing with you.
No. It's okay. And we also, a lot of your plays too, Ryan, were a lot of like, it was almost like Eugene O'Neill mixed with Christopher Durang sometimes, which I loved.
Yeah, like Ionesco. He was a bit, he was an inspiration in that the absurdists were an inspiration. And and then, in features at one time, I really liked like Brothers McMullen and like Ed Burns early stuff. I'm not sure if I revisited it, but Scorsese was a huge, his films, and not just the gangster ones, but like all of them, all his films were huge inspirations. And then obviously Taxi Driver and Paul Schaefer, people like that, but also, Truman Capote, and go back to In Cold Blood and that type of crime. So it comes from various places, Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird is still my all-time favorite novel.
Yeah.
And so it just comes from a lot of different sources. And then as I started, saying I want to do television, then it was Alan Ball, and I loved Six Feet Under when it was David Chase.
Yes.
I love David Milch. I love Deadwood. Peter Tolan, who created Rescue Me, and Larry Sand, well, him and Gary Shandling show ran Larry Sanders, but he was a big part of that show. And he's become a good friend of mine. And then I worked with him at one point, which was such a blessing. And
there's a feel to everything. That there's a distinct, like, you can feel that in your work, that all of those things that have, like, that you've pulled from or been inspired from, or in terms of tone, structure, character development, everything. And a lot of that is in the shows that you've worked on. There's a lot of a similar feel to a lot of them. It's distinctly you. You have a style like gritty, raw, honest, like characters that are dealing with a distinct, clear, like, want. Like, I want this thing, and here are the obstacles in my way, and I'll do whatever I can do to get those things, or gritty, like Sopranos, like we talked about. I know that was one of yours.
The right parts for actors that clearly would love to get their hands on, like Mike, I can see you now.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Doing that play as the professor and doing a great job with that, where maybe 10 years ago, you'd be too young to play it or whatever, but if you're writing material where actors are like, oh, I want to do that, I want to play that part, then there's something to that writing, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's all dimensional, so.
Yeah, but let's talk about that. Like, in terms of all of the projects that you've worked on, Ryan, like, what would you say was your best experience?
Do you mean television?
Mm-hmm. Let's do television, yeah.
I mean, in the end, probably Ozark.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote three episodes for Ozark, correct?
I wrote three episodes for Ozark. I loved the people I worked with. And that was a show where, my work was not messed with a lot. And what I mean by that is, you're on a lot of shows where, the boss will, either rewrite a little or rewrite a lot or whatever. And every boss is different. And some bosses want to have total control, and some bosses are more hands off. And so you run the gamut, right? But Ozark, I had such a good relationship with my boss that he kind of, trusted me. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where I can watch my episodes and be like, that's absolutely 100% mine.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question about this? The mechanics of TV writing, because this is something that's always interested me. That just interested me in terms of how to do this. Would you say it's challenging in general when there's already this story, there's already these characters, they have a certain cadence and way of speaking to each other, infusing yourself in there as writing just for specific episodes? I would say, what's your process of doing that to make sure that you started talking about that when you're taking notes and watching TV, you were doing this in college, infusing your own tone, your own style into this already well-oiled machine?
You work in a group, right? So mm-hmm. there's a whole staff and there's the showrunner. And so when I say I can watch them and say, yeah, that's all, 100% mine, that's misleading in the sense that the group will come up, will break an episode together. So we mm-hmm. all know what the scenes are. We all know. And then one person will be assigned to write the outline and the script for that episode that you figured out in the room as a group.
Oh,
and so And so when I say that, I can be like, that's my script. Like, I'm watching what I wrote in my script, and some showrunners will, rewrite stuff and, mm-hmm. Hopefully it's better, but it's not always the case. And, sometimes that's not, but when I came into Ozark, it was in season one. And so the creator was a feature guy and he wrote the first two episodes and then left the show because he was doing other stuff, in the feature world. And so my boss, the showrunner, there was like seven of us. It was our job to figure out what this series was going to be. We kind of had to shift some stuff because of the way the show was. And we put more emphasis on, the Julia Garner character and Laura Linney's character. And, we made this conscious decision to do so.
Both of them are so amazing. Like,
they're incredible. They're incredible. They're incredible. But that my boss had a lot of trust in me. And so he was the executive producer. I was a co-executive producer in that first season. And he would lean on me for stuff and we would lean on each other. And so we really felt, we're really happy with that, with the work. And so that's kind of what I was referring to with that. So that in and of itself made that one of the best experiences, because I still have such good friends from that and I'm proud of the work. Mm-hmm. But there's been like other experiences where it's like, I worked on this show Outsiders with Peter Tolan and like, maybe that wasn't as rewarding from, as creatively rewarding as Ozark was, but I became super close with Peter and I wouldn't trade that for anything. So, and then there's other shows like when I worked on Cold Case, like definitely not as creatively fulfilling, but it's like where I got my break and there was a lot of good people there and, was proud of the stuff we did there. So, every good experience is good in a different way. The bad ones you just kind of forget about. But like all the good ones are good for different reasons.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. And Cold Case was the first time you were ever in a writer's room professionally, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that compare to all the other shows that you've worked on? Are writer rooms pretty consistent? Are they always very different or...
Yeah, I mean, most of them, it's just like kind of a think tank. You got, 5 to 10 people sitting in a, basically looks like a boardroom with a table and whiteboards everywhere. And you're just talking about the show all day. figuring out episodes, figuring out characters, and that's what you're doing all day. Mm-hmm. You order lunch and it gets delivered. You eat lunch, you go back to work. Well, now it's all home, so you don't do that anymore. Now
I was going to say, did the pandemic make everything over Zoom?
Yeah, everything's over Zoom now. Yeah.
Does that change the dynamic? Is it not as...
Completely.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's probably not as fun. It just like everything's one big Zoom call now.
Well, the things that are good about Zoom cannot be understated. And what I mean by that is... it's pretty amazing to stay in my pajamas all day.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah.
Like that cannot be understated. It's also pretty cool to not deal with LA traffic. And you hang up from work in your home. And because of the pandemic, we were able to get our dog because I was going to be home all the time. So we wouldn't have our dog if it wasn't for that. So those things can't be understated, but I do wish one or two days a week I could still go and physically see people. Like it's there's definitely a vibe that you can feel with people. You know, where you just don't get as personally close because you're not talking about anything other than work. Like when you're on a Zoom call, you're talking about the show and there's very few sidebars. And when you're in the room, sometimes those sidebars be annoying because you really need to get work, but you also are like going out to eat every day for lunch or not every day, but you're eating together and you're sharing stories and there's much more personal, you know, some of my dearest friends I met in writer's rooms. And you share that together. And you don't get that from Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's got to be a more focused environment because at home, we know working from home, there's always distractions happening.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Like, you guys are there to do this one thing.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, I think I'm more focused in the room. Mm. I'm actually physically in the room with people.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, there's just something about the energy. There's something about... Also, just staring at a screen makes my eyes like, and I kind of worked in spurts anyway. Like I'll like work really hard for like an hour or two and then like need a quick break or whatever. And I usually work much better in the mornings than I do in the evenings. And yeah.
Yeah, Ryan goes to bed at like 5 p.m. and gets up at like 4 a.m.
Do you really?
No.
You're not far off, dude.
No.
Now, my wife and I, we're both, so she's working right now, but we're both such homebodies that we are in bed by 9 o'clock pretty much every night.
Mm-hmm.
She is up at 4 a.m. every day because she's working out.
Yeah.
And then I'm usually up no later than 7.
That's amazing.
I always wanted to be a morning person.
Yeah.
Mike and I will be texting each other about the podcast at like it's like 3 a.m. Like, oh no, this is when I'm up. Like,
we're
totally nocturnal people.
Total night owls. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Mikey knows this. I'm sober now, so that's a huge part of it. Like when I was not sober. That was not the case.
No, How many years have you been? How many years has it been?
Been a little over 5 now.
That's amazing, good man. I'm so proud of you, buddy. That's fucking amazing. That's awesome.
But I'd be, you know, most nights of the week I was closing the bar, you know.
Yeah.
I was up really late. And I was still getting up early in the morning because I've never been like really I don't sleep great. I've never slept great. Like I've never. So, but now I'm like at least getting to bed at a good hour. My wife, she'll sleep anywhere. She'll just like,
that's amazing.
She passes out and that's it.
Well, you've worked with a lot of, I was going through the list. You've worked with names. I mean, I've seen the episodes of so many of your shows, obviously. I mean, I've seen everything you've done, but I was looking back at just kind of reminders of some of the names that you've worked with. And like, I didn't realize that in your episode of Cold Case One Fall that you worked with Lauren Cohen for Walking Dead. I didn't realize she was in that, like, which is amazing.
I didn't, I mean, she wasn't, She wasn't that yet.
No, yeah. And then she's one of the main characters in The Walking Dead, which is fucking crazy. I love her.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I really didn't.
Wow,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's been on it for a while.
Oh, but she didn't start on it. She wasn't on it in the pilot, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's... Oh, no. I'm sorry. If she came in like season two.
Gotcha.
But then it's been on ever since. And oh, she left for a little bit, but
you know who else? You know who I thought you were gonna say in that episode?
Roddy Piper. Yeah, which is fucking awesome, man. I mean, he was my childhood hero. I'm sure yours too.
He's a really nice guy.
You said, yeah, he was awesome. I'd love to hear that.
He was a sweetheart.
And Jay Thomas as well.
Yes. I he was only on set the one day. And it was, if I saw him now, he wouldn't remember me. It was more like, hi, nice thing.
Yeah. Well, no.
As well.
Yeah. And then, Jay Thomas, I think he passed away.
Did he?
I think so. Yeah. Just FYI, I'm pretty sure.
Well, then I sound stupid.
No. Like,
then it must have been. Did he pass away?
I think so.
Oh my God.
Yeah, fairly recently.
It was in 17.
Oh, wow. Well, shit. Yeah, time's fucking flying. But no, sorry to drop that on you. Yeah.
Oh, no. It's.
But yeah, I know. But I know. Rest in peace. But yeah, no, like Nick Jonas you worked with and you said he was cool.
Yeah, he's very nice.
And McKelty Williams, though, is that?
Yeah, Michael T. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael T. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah. Who's Bubba and Forrest Gump, Shane?
Yeah. He is a really good guy, too. Yeah, he is a really good guy.
So that's awesome. I just wanted to throw that out there. You've worked with some really cool people just in the industry. And what would you say in overall? I have so many questions for you. We got a little more time, but. What was your favorite memory and just in Hollywood in general, not even necessarily in the business? I know we had many fun nights and fun times it could be in the business, but what was your favorite memory, would you say, thus far?
Keep talking, guys. I'll be right back.
In the business.
Yeah.
I mean, probably when I got my first job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. probably when I got my first, and maybe watching my first episode.
Yeah, seeing your name written by Ryan Farley on your first
case was pretty cool. All the firsts, your first day on set, seeing it get shot, your first day in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff's really exciting. Outside of the business, my wedding was, awesome, the best day.
Yeah.
But I would have to go with all those firsts. Mm-hmm. The first time someone's interested in your work, the first time you meet a manager who wants to sign you, all those firsts you go through, and you really, because it's such a rejection business.
Yes.
At every stage, at every level.
Uh-huh.
It's such at every level you're getting told no way more than you're getting told yes. And so when you get those yeses early on,
yeah,
man, it keeps you hungry, I guess. It just gives you a kick, and you're like, sure. Hey, maybe this isn't the craziest thing ever.
Yeah. No, it is true. We talk about that a lot on here, about how you have to be prepared for that rejection in this business. Like, it's not, you can't go on 10 auditions or 10 meetings and expect that all of them are going to lead to something. I mean, it could take years for
years. I mean,
I
don't envy actors.
Oh, God.
My wife's an actor, and obviously you're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount of hard work and just the constant auditioning, constant.
But even as a writer, I mean, you're auditioning in a way. I mean, you have to do pitch meetings.
Yeah, you are. But It's a little different in the sense that they have to read something you wrote at some point.
Right.
You know, for actors, a lot of times it's like a headshot and they'll make choices off that, or, you know, it's just different. You know, if you sit down and read a script, you have to commit a little bit of time to that. Whereas I feel like with actors, you know, it's just casting director will look at a headshot and that'll be it.
In the room, you get like a minute maybe to show someone what you can do very quickly. Exactly. It's not even like usually an insight into what you can really do. It's just this like quick blip of like judgment of just like,
it's a quick blip of judgment on like how your whole ability is.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's just not, you know, auditioning, you might've had a bad day. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on? You know, and at least on, you know, the writing side of things, you know, if they're reading a piece you wrote, I guess that's more personal than an audition sometimes. Cause a lot of times, you know, you're writing very personal things that people are reading, but they're not like looking at a headshot with it, you know, and they're investing the time to read it And a lot of times you're also not getting like nose right to your face.
Yeah. True.
You know, you're not in the room watching them while they read.
Right.
Like with an audition, it's like a lot of times you can feel if you're going to get it, but I think a lot of times you could probably feel if you're not going to get it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially all the auditions I've had where the casting director's not even looking at me are my favorite. Or like not, I'm not on video. Dozens of auditions I had where the casting were just literally staring at the table the whole time. And then they're like, all right, thank you. Afterward, I'm like, okay, I guess I didn't get that.
It sucks, man. So imagine if like I was in a room with someone while they were reading my script and they just kept going. Turn the page. Yeah. Turn the page and just go. Yeah. No.
Yeah. That'd be terrible. Has that happened to you? Or
No. The difference between actors and being on the writing side of things is like I don't have to see their reaction.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Or you audition for something as an actor and you can tell it's already been cast and they're just going
through so much. Yeah. I was going to talk about real quick the how do you stay motivated? How do you keep going after all these years? Like, cause I mean, do you have moments where you're like, cause I've never known you where you haven't been writing something. Do you ever get like in a day or a week or a month where you're like, I don't even feel like writing right now.
Oh yeah. Those days I'll play Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I'm an adult.
Yeah, but you're allowed to do that. It's okay. But no, how do you keep motivated? Well, how do you get back into the swing? I mean,
it's a really good question because it's funny, you know, because before you're doing it professionally, you really are just writing what you want, and so you're not really at a loss to find stuff because it's always what you want. Mm-hmm. So then sometimes when you're doing it professionally, you're getting paid, but it's not stuff you want, you would be doing otherwise. And that's where it gets a little strange sometimes, you know, because if you're working on something that's really time consuming, you know, maybe you're not working as much on your own stuff during that time and then you're doing it for a living. And then as you get deeper into it, it's how you make a living. Mm. So a little bit like I can't really do anything else. Like if I were to, I mean, I guess I could go teach, which I would want to do at some point, you know, but, you know, the money's not the same. And it's like, once you're kind of doing this for a living, you kind of have to try to keep doing it for a living. Mm-hmm. And that presents a whole other side of things of trying to, you know, find stuff to either develop or, you know, get on shows that are staffing, you know, so you can make your living. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, even when I'm developing stuff, it really just comes down to do I love it?
Mm-hmm.
Do I love this piece of material? Because now another thing that changes as you get deeper into it professionally, people come to you with stuff.
Right.
And that's stuff that's not happening, you know, when you're just doing it on your own. As you get into it more, you know, studios, producers, etc., will come to you and say, hey, read this book, see if you'd want to develop it into something, or hey, this article, or whatever the IP is. So now you're in a place where, yes, you're thinking of your own stuff, but you're also getting stuff sent to you, which is obviously cool in the sense that you might get some cool stuff, but at the same time, you have to love it, because mm-hmm. you're going to be spending a lot of time on it. And in the beginning, you're probably not getting paid, actually. You got to sell it first. So mm-hmm. not always, but a lot of times it's like you're developing a pitch on spec. So you're, you know, kind of doing this work for free at the hopes of selling it to then get to write a pilot or whatever, however it goes. And if you don't love it, you're going to be fucking miserable.
Yeah. Man. Like, yeah.
So I basically, whatever the market's saying, and right now, I guess the market is looking for lighter stuff because of like all the heaviness kind of in the world with pandemic. And so people are looking for lighter stuff. And, you know, I just took out a pitch about a month ago. That was the best pitch I ever took out based on one of the best books I've ever read. And I was so excited. We couldn't sell it.
Mm.
We couldn't sell it. It was heavy. It was heavy. It dealt with some issues of domestic violence early in the story. And I think that was something that the people didn't want to go there. And it was the best pitch I ever took out.
Mm.
You know, imagine
like if it wasn't the pandemic, it would have been considered.
I don't know.
It's hard to say. Because they all say, oh, I just want to watch something light right now because life is so
heavy
right now.
They say that, but it's a bit of a cop out, you know. The number one show last year was Squid Game.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
You know, Mayor of Easttown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were comedies that did well. They're sure. Comedies, you know.
Yeah,
but there's also heavy dramas that did well also. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, it's a, and who know, but you know, I like what I like, and that's not going to change. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there's a couple things that there's one thing I have a deal to develop a pitch for. So I'm going to develop that. And that's based on a very dark novel.
Hmm.
I'm still developing. Well, they're closing all the deals now for the project. What's Done in Darkness, based on that Laura McCune novel.
Cool. Is that the one you were telling me about that
has
a big name attached, which is cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The problem, what starts happening sometimes is like the big places, because they can, they'll just open it up and be like, hey, you know, let's hear five different pitches. So you get five people doing this work for free to come in and try to do this pitch to maybe get this job. And then the big place could be like, hey, we're just going to go with this other, you know, like we're just going to go with this other person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to really say, is this, do I love this enough to go down this path?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then some people in our business, you know, once you get to a certain place, you can get on what's called an overall deal, which mm-hmm. is like, my buddy Peter has an overall over at FX, you know, and they pay you a certain amount for two or three years, however long your contract is, but you're developing for them. Mm. So any idea you have, you take to them. And, you know, any script you have, they have, you know, you take to them exclusively. Mm. And that's another thing. If the money's good, it's totally worth it. You can also get tied in, like if you're on an overall deal at a place where you're not happy, then they just kind of keep putting you on their shows to work. It's like, yeah, okay, that's kind of cool. But if you don't like the shows and you're just kind of stuck in this deal, so there's benefits to just being able to freelance and go do whatever, wherever. But you, ultimately, you just got to find stuff you love.
Yeah.
That's what keeps you inspired.
That's awesome. I think that's an important message to kind of encapsulate this whole interview is focusing on doing that thing that does give you that love, that feeling
yeah.
of passion. Because, like, I'm doing this because I love it.
Yeah. Because so many people will try to be like, oh, well, that movie was a hit, so we got to find the next that.
Yes.
Right. And it's, if you're chasing something, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, it's already been done. You know, you just got to find stuff that you like.
Yeah.
And then at least if it doesn't go anywhere, you'll be like, oh, well, I really enjoyed doing it, or I really loved mm-hmm. that story. Like with the one thing we took out last month, that we couldn't sell, like, yeah, it was heartbreaking. I don't regret doing it though, because I loved the story so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt
and so many great films get rejected for years before mm-hmm. they actually get produced.
Yeah, it's you know? So weird.
It might happen someday.
yeah,
and you just never know. I mean, it's like Mikey and I were talking about that, just how many no's you get, at every level.
Yeah.
Just no matter where you're at, no matter what level you're at, you're getting them way more no's than yeses. And so,
yeah, you really can't worry about, yeah, like you said, Ryan, too, like pleasing other people. It's got to be because it's going to be an endless pursuit of like trying to get their other people's approval, which isn't what it's about. It's about fulfilling your own soul and saying like, okay, I'm doing this because I love it and this is for me. And if it does go somewhere, then great. But that's not the end game. It's doing it out of the love.
Yeah, and everyone has different, you know, definitions of that. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who, you know, want to use their work to make social commentary and mm-hmm. or change politics and there's value in that too. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's work that, you know, just wants to observe and let the people comment for themselves and kind of show what is, and there's value in that too. So whatever, you know, you want to do, or however you see, I guess, yourself as an artist, you know, make it your own. There's value, you know, there's value in that. And yeah. So I would say that as well.
You mentioned Squid Game too, and him, the creator of that, he was rejected for years on that show. Like I heard he pitched it like crazy and everyone was like, fuck you, this is a terrible idea, this will never work, you know, for 10 years or more he was told that. So and then look, and then, you know, so yeah, you just don't know, but I'm sure deep down he was like, I love this, I'm proud of this, I want to get it out there.
And yeah. he also seemed to be, you know, coming from Korea, he also mm-hmm. seemed to be making very strong comments,
mm-hmm.
you know, about where he grew up and what that meant to him. And at least that's what it seemed from watching the material. And mm-hmm. there's a lot that's relevant. I liked
it. Loved it. Yeah, we loved it. Yeah.
I thought it was great.
It's so good. So
I
good.
Liked it. And I don't watch a ton of scripted stuff, to be honest. I watch mostly documentaries.
Yeah.
Documentaries too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I laugh because Ryan's not exaggerating. Like he watches, him and Rachel watch a lot of documentaries.
Pretty much every documentary.
Like, did you watch Cheer on Netflix? That's the one everybody's talking about.
I don't know. I actually haven't watched that. Hey, Bandy. You
guys, they watch more like crime
we drama watch a lot of the true. Yeah. We watch a lot of it. We watch a lot of foreign true crime documentary series.
Yeah.
That's like, you in. That's our like go-to. Like, is there a good like Spanish true crime doc series?
Hell, you know, yeah.
It's a great documentary. I'll get away from Cheer for a second because everybody knows about it, but it is a great documentary. Mm. Documentary series, but a great one was Athlete A, about the gymnast that came forward about Larry Nassar.
Yeah.
It sucks you in. Like, it's like, okay, can't stop watching this, but it's a great, talk about true crime.
The last one we watched was we watched two of them. There was The Times Square Killer on Netflix.
Mm. Right. Times Square Killer?
I don't know if that was the title. I don't know if that was the title, but that was the site in the 70s. In the 70s, there was a serial killer in Times Square, and Times Square was obviously so very different back then. And, mm-hmm. you know, this person was able to function, you know, just untethered because of the way, you know, police departments didn't communicate and just the nature of Times Square at the time. Mm. And that was really good. And then we watched another one. Oh, what was the name of that one? It was basically about the filmmaker's father was the prosecutor of someone who was serving a life sentence for murder. And the filmmaker was questioning whether his father put away an innocent man.
Oh.
So he's going back and looking into the case. What the hell is the name of that? Black Rock? Murder at Black Rock or murder at... It was either on Prime or HBO. Oh, and then we're watching the Joe Montana documentary on Peacock right now.
Oh, wow. Nice. So many, I can't keep up. Ryan, since I have a list of all the ones that Ryan and Rachel have recommended to me, and there's like 100, and I haven't watched any of them, so I'll get to one of these days. But they all sound amazing. But anyway, so no, this is awesome, and thank you so much. And like, what advice? I mean, it's that age old question, but I think it's a valid one because you have a lot of experience. But what advice would you give to someone listening that would say, "I want to be a writer," or "I want to write scripts," or "I want to be a TV writer," but they're just starting out, or they're experienced, they've got a lot under their belt, but they're like, what do I do? How do they, what would you say to them?
I would tell them, I mean, I basically want to be sober. No, I'm just, helped me. Yeah. That helped me. But, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, too cliche, but I think it's the same stuff. Like, you're going to get rejections, you know, you're going to need to have some patience. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to make sacrifices, you know, whatever those sacrifices are, whether that be moving, whether that be giving up some money for a little bit, whether that be, you know, whatever those say, living in a shittier place, whatever those sacrifices are, you're probably going to have to make some sacrifices. But if you love it, if you love doing it while you're making those sacrifices, you won't be miserable because you'll always be doing something you love. If you don't, go do something else. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. You know, it's, so that would be it. You That's know, good. It's all. Ryan, it's
do
all
you
the
still
stuff.
Love it? Do you still love it after writing for TV all these years?
I love
get
yeah,
excited
I love,
and love the process of writing.
Yeah, I love the process of storytelling. I just finished my latest script for this show I'm working on now, the FX show, and it was fun.
Cool.
Like, it was cool. You know, I was, you know, and my colleagues dug it, and it was cool when I can. I don't always love being in the room. Like, I don't always love like everything about what I do. Mm-hmm. But when I can just like sit home with a notebook in my hand and just do that process of just writing down scenes and creating scenes and telling story, it's fun, man. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
What part of it do you enjoy the most? Do you enjoy the creating the atmosphere or the dialogue, like actually hearing actors execute your dialogue? Like, I wrote that episode. I actually wrote the scene between these people, or is it a combination of both?
Well, it's, I think it's exploring the emotion of the scene, you know, because some scenes have no dialogue, you know. It's if you can elicit emotion, you know, by examining whatever human condition you're examining, you know, or whatever relationship you're examining, there's a rush in that, and there's, you know, I feel like I'm evolving a little bit in that when that happens. And also just like when you've gotten this goes to deadlines, but when you're on this deadline and you're like, and you finish, that's a rush, man. You're just like, that's like a rush like no other.
Mm-hmm. Writer's high.
You know, it's just like this rush, and like, I love that. Like, I love the process of when I can just get, I would love to just do that. Like, everything else I know is part of it and I got to deal with it. But if I could just pay just to like sit in my room with my notebook, that would be amazing. Cause I love that process.
Mm-hmm. You're a true writer. I have a friend that quoted somebody who said this. I don't know who originally quoted this, but she said, and she's very successful in her chosen career. Don't half-ass a bunch of things, whole-ass one thing. And the quote that's been in my head this whole interview has been, he whole-ass one thing. And you have a really nice career because you committed to that process. Doesn't mean it wasn't easy. Doesn't mean you don't get no's and have shit about your job you don't like any job. Well, we have Mike, do you have anything else before we have
no I think that's good, man. Thank you, Ryan, so much, man. I appreciate you, buddy. And like, it's good insight. I think it's important just to kind of, you know, for people to understand exactly what goes into being a writer. Like, it's not easy at all, and you really truly have to in your soul love it at your core. And that's something that I've always known you to have, is that love and that passion for reading, writing, watching TV shows, studying those shows, studying movies, understanding what it means to write dialogue and structure. It's just in your, you know, you could do it like effortlessly, just complete understanding. Like, we've written a couple scripts together, and I remember like you were always just on top of it right away. Like, well, this has to happen in act three. This has to happen. And I was always just so amazed by that. So I think it's important, like everybody listening, like if you want to do these things, like acting, writing, whatever it might be, like you gotta like truly at your core love it, because like you said, Ryan, you're gonna be broke for a while. Like, you're gonna struggle. Like, it's a part of it. You're not going to just be like, I want to do it, and within a year be like, I'm successful and everything's working out. Like, you have to be like, I'm ready to sweat and bleed for this, and it might not pay off. It might not go somewhere.
You have to be okay knowing it might not pay off.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't get my first professional gig till I was like close to 30.
Yeah.
You know, my whole 20s was just ramen noodles and not even Campbell's soup, like secondary.
Shambles. Shambles soup. Yeah.
The cheaper brand next to the Campbell soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ramen. Didn't even have real ramen. Like that, you know, it was like that for a while.
Yeah. And
that's why, you know, those firsts have hold such an important place, right? Because there are so many days when that's not happening. Mm-hmm. So many no's and so many days that that's not happening.
Yep.
Was there ever a chapter in your life that you had in your adult life? I'm not talking about when you were a college student. But in your adult life, like in your 30s, was there ever a chapter where you worked a job that was a career completely outside of writing? Or in your, since from age 30 on, you've always been a professional writer?
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. And I feel like there's a pattern with the successful people I know in this industry and film and television. They know exactly what the fuck they want and they laser focus on it. And they really don't, they don't take on, they don't do what I do, take on, work a lot of side projects and then take on big careers that have nothing to do with the industry. Cause it's just, there's a lesson in that, in focusing on what you want and making that you had that laser focus and you didn't veer off. I didn't hear anywhere in your story you say, well, for, you know, 8 years I tried producing, or 8 years I was kind of acting, and then I was also working at General Motors on the assembly line. Like, there's none of that in your story, which is fine that people have that in their stories. But it's when I hear that you, oh, I didn't get my first paid gig till 30, I think, oh, like, it already at 30, you're a working writer. That's what I'm thinking, right? So it's interesting.
Oh, pretty old at the time.
I'm sure Hollywood makes that feel very old.
Dude, I remember when you were turning 21. I've told you this, but I was 19 and you were turning 21. I was like, Ryan's so fucking old. Like, I remember thinking that.
Felt old. I still have a picture.
And that was 1999, I think, or 2000 or something like that. Yeah.
Picture of me and Mikey actually was showing someone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
I love to Ryan, you are Mikey.
Oh, Mikey, yeah. McKinney. Well, we're brothers for sure. I mean, it goes way beyond
like a
friendship. Yeah. It's fun. For sure. Yeah, he's always called me Mikey from like day one. I love it. But no, it's cool. I'm so proud of you, man. I mean, I really am. Like, I've said that to you a million times, but you continue to inspire me, and I'm just so unbelievably proud. I've watched you from like the beginning, like literally, like sleeping on my couch, like, and Warren and being like, what, you know, but knowing, but never not knowing, I want to do this. Like, I'm going to write scripts. I'm going to write for TV. Like, and just always writing. And that's the lesson. Always writing every day. What is that picture from? Oh yeah. Holy shit.
It's hard to see it. It's like,
it's hard to see it.
Too bright.
You might need to like tap the screen with your finger. It might like make it focus.
Is my head shaved there, or is that when I shaved my head? I went through
text a phase. Text it to Mike, and then he can text it to me. So yeah. I'll be able to see it.
It's a pretty good picture. I don't know.
I think did we live in LA at that point?
Oh, that was in, that was at fucking Goldie's.
Yeah. That's our jam. I love that place.
Where's Goldie? Is that Michigan or LA?
Yeah, it's a bar in Michigan. It used to be our go-to hangout spot. It's awesome. It used to be a brothel in like the 1800s or something like that. Yeah, so it's been around for a long time. It's historic.
Crazy.
Let's close up. And then, because Ryan's bedtime's coming up. So let's let him go to bed.
Yeah.
9 p.m.
We finished with the James Lipton Inside the Actor Studio questions. Have you ever been asked those before? I'm getting a bunch of pop ups on my computer right now. It's fun. There we go.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think I have.
Let's not overthink it. I'll just dive in. And should I just ask them all, Mike, or you want to ask some of them?
No, you can go. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I want to make sure that we have all of them. Okay. What's your favorite word?
I like the word myriad. I think that's I like the word Rachel. It's my wife, you know, my wife's name.
That's sweet.
That's a great answer.
I like love. I like, you know, words I don't like. And, you know, I don't like the word anxiety. It causes me anxiety. Like things I don't like, I don't really like the word for those things. But like as the word itself, whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question is, what turns you on?
I think curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What turns you off?
I'm really turned off. It's too easy to say stupidity, but I'm almost like very much turned off by like rudeness or impatience, even though I can be impatient at times.
Mm-hmm.
Off for me. I'm also turned off by apathy.
Mm-hmm. Those are really good answers.
Mm-hmm.
What sound or noise do you love?
Other than the obvious, which is, you know, my wife and, you know, hearing her, is I'm going to have to go with, like, my dog getting super excited when he sees my wife in the morning.
That's a great answer. What sound or noise do you hate?
When my dog yelps.
Aww. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I get it. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
And what, there's two more questions. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt if you weren't a writer?
Mm.
Football coach.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I knew you were going to say that.
Shout out to Friday Night Lights, one of the best drama series ever. Mm-hmm. All right.
My friends used to write on that.
Nice.
So good. And last question is, it's not written down here, but I'm remembering it. If heaven exists, what would you want God to say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I told you I was here.
Ooh, I like that answer.
That's good. You had
great answers. I love your answers.
Yeah.
This is awesome, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this, buddy. I love you, and I appreciate you so much. And I can't say it enough how proud of you I am. Fantasy's World.